Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Dan Apfel. He's the executive director of the Responsible Endowments Coalition, a nonprofit dedicated to monitoring and changing the way universities and colleges invest their money. Prior to joining the coalition, Dan worked for the National Federation of Community Development Credit Unions. One full disclosure detail. Sarah Prally, a colleague of mine in the political science department at Syracuse University, is a former secretary of the coalition. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, briefly, tell me about the coalition's mission and its history, how it got started.
Why? Yeah, well, so we were founded actually by college students in 2004 who saw the enormous amount of money that colleges and universities have collectively. It's about $400 billion in their endowments. And they were from five schools on the East Coast, and they said, each of them individually saw the amount of money their school had and said, we really should do something about this. Our school has mission, we have values, and our endowments aren't being invested in aligned with our mission and values. So they're not taking into account sustainability or social justice or any of the issues that we learn about so much in the classroom. And so the students met, they got together, and they created a network to help other students and faculty, alumni, administrators to move forward the conversation around responsible investment on campus.
Well, one of the things that you said there leads directly into the next thing I wanted to ask you, which is what makes an investment scheme to you folks ethical or unethical? Are there certain lines you're looking not to have crossed or certain markers of ethical strategies? Tell me about that.
So we really don't define what's responsible or ethical for a college or a university. We really leave it up to them to think about these things and say, you know, what fits our values? Because college and universities actually have established values. They've made statements on things. And they have policies on campus. And there's no reason those policies shouldn't be looked at as part of their investment strategy. There are some things that we take that are issues that we think are of utmost importance that need to be addressed, but we actually don't generally define how to address them. For instance, the issue of climate change, right? Mm-hmm. There's a big national campaign going on right now to demand that colleges and universities divest from fossil fuels. And we support that campaign. We believe that it would be a good step for a college and university to make. But if a college or university wants to take a different step around climate change, we think that's also positive. So it's not that they don't take that they divest exclusively. It's that they actually must take climate change into effect, into their decision-making process when they're looking at investments. And if they're not doing that, we think that from a value standpoint, that they're making a mistake and that they're not following their mission. And then we also think that from an investment standpoint, they're making an investment mistake.
So what kinds of things does your coalition do to help support these efforts? What do you do on the ground with the college students at different campuses?
Well, so we do a few different things. First and foremost, like I've mentioned, we work with college students who are interested in responsible investing. So we educate them about investing and about endowments particularly and how endowments work and who is making the decisions about endowments, how the trustees work, the investment committee, the investment office, and how the decisions on Wall Street are made. And then also about how responsible investing works, how things could be done differently, and how students could have a voice in that process. So we help them organize, get other students involved, educate them, and also help them make proposals and meet with their administrators and really talk to their administrators about how they could do things differently and exchange ideas across campus.
And I was wondering whether in your conversations with the students you work with, the students you looked at other ways to make ethical investments beyond where the savings of the school are sitting. I have in mind things like involvement and support of things going on in the community, different ways in which a university might get involved in its local area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we typically look at investments by a college or university. That usually means the endowment, but we look at that across the spectrum. So it's not only which kind of hedge fund can we invest in or what kind of stocks, what companies should we invest in, but also are there opportunities that a university is missing out on? So Syracuse University, for example, has done a lot of great work building partnerships with the local community, but they're not using their investment portfolio to invest in community development, financial institutions, in homeownership, in projects in Syracuse that would help develop the economy in Syracuse, help create more jobs here. And they're doing that with some of their resources, but they're not activating all of the resources of the institution, particularly their endowment, their money, to support that.
I wanted to come back to thinking about some of the schools that are in our listening area that you may have particular views of or have worked with the students in one way or another. We'll come back to that later. Let me ask you this other question now, though. It goes back to the founding and the nature of the organization. I noticed you mentioned that the beginning of this organization came from students at five schools, and they're private elite schools that these five students came from, the University of Pennsylvania, Duke, Williams College, Barnard College, and Swarthmore College. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, how relevant are the issues that you're trying to raise? How relevant are those things to state schools and to less elite schools that have less money to throw around, really?
You know, I think they're very relevant to most schools. There's about 800 colleges and universities in the U.S. that have an endowment out of 4,400 schools in the country. But many of those schools that don't have an endowment have some other kind of investment portfolio. So they could be investing more from their reserves into the community or doing other things. Now, we do focus primarily on those 800 colleges and universities, which include most of the ones in New York, actually, or many of the ones in New York actually have endowments. And even of those, the endowment money is concentrated at the top at the Harvards and Yales. But we actually believe that it's much easier for a place like Syracuse or SUNY ESF or Ithaca College, for instance, than for a Cornell to change its investments. Because when you have $100 million or a few hundred million dollars, there's a lot less at stake for the university. There's a lot less people that have their careers built on how they're investing that money. Whereas at a place like Cornell, the people who manage the money are making large, make a lot of money. They have big salaries. And there's just a lot of different stakeholders who have more input into the endowment. Whereas at a place like SUNY ESF, where they have $60 or $100 million, which sounds – it's actually a lot of money, right? For you or I, it's a lot of money. But compared to Cornell, it's not. They actually are able to change the way that they're doing things in the more easily. And so I think we really believe that while it would be great and it's very important for the institutions at the top to change what they're doing, and they actually are, that the real leadership is typically going to come from the institutions that are more in the size of a SUNY ESF or a place like Syracuse University.
I'm reminded of a famous quote by the late Senator Everett Dirksen, a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money. So the scale is interesting. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Dan Apfel, Executive Director of the Responsible Endowments Coalition. Go back to the history of this. Your organization founded in 2004, you said. Obviously, the interest in this predates that, and I was wondering if there was one moment in history when awareness of this issue really started to take off. The thing that I thought of right away was apartheid in South Africa. Is that the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think apartheid divestment from South Africa was really the moment that crystallized energy both around responsible investing in general, but particularly around college and university campuses. Over 150 colleges divested over the course of 12 or 15 years from South Africa, and really led the way for many other institutional investors, from pension funds to religious institutions to doing responsible investing. And it's very interesting. College and universities actually in the 70s and 80s were considered to be the leaders in responsible investing and taking their values into consideration when making investment decisions, and also just looking at these issues in general around their investments, issues like sustainability and corporate engagement. And since then, college and universities really haven't changed very much. Until 2004, when we started, there had not been many changes. And many of the schools actually had the same policies in place as they had when they divested from apartheid. And so we really think that there's a big opportunity for colleges and universities, which are one of the largest pools of capital that actually has a real constituency and the ability to actually change what they're doing. So they have students on campus. There's alumni who care about the colleges and universities.
Well, something there you mentioned I wanted to follow up on, and that is the ultimate end game of this, the ultimate point. Is it to have the universities then be models for other investors that people will look and say, the example you gave of the divestiture from apartheid, that all right, they're doing it, so maybe we need to rethink what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, universities actually already are leaders in the institutional, so large investor space. And many, from pension funds around the world to sovereign wealth funds, they've actually followed what colleges and universities have done. And so it's and that's in a non-responsible investing fashion. So I don't – it's not a big reach for colleges and universities to lead again in doing responsible investing and looking at sustainability and examining how climate change impacts their investments. And so we really believe – I really believe that colleges moving on investments can help educate a generation of people in how money works and can actually really help change the way the financial system acts and exists and how it interacts with all of these different social issues and citizens.
And what do you regard as your organization's biggest single victory so far?
Well, we've had a lot of victories, a lot of small victories. But I would say that the biggest victory that we've had is actually changing the way colleges and universities do proxy voting. Now, for many people probably don't know what proxy voting is, but it's a mechanism that allows shareholders to engage and share their views with corporate boards, with the management of corporations like Exxon and Walmart. And colleges and universities, since apartheid, most of them had stopped voting these proxies. So they, rather than actually taking a stance, we're just saying, we actually are just leaving the management of these corporations up to you. And since our founders started organizing in around 2000 and then 2004, we've actually changed the way most colleges and universities with major endowments do proxy voting, either directly through student engagement or even here at Syracuse, where they've hired an outside service to vote their proxies, where before they were not doing that.
My guest is Dan Apfel. He's the executive director of the Responsible Endowments Coalition, a nonprofit focused on the way that colleges and universities invest their money. I just asked you about your single biggest victory. I want to turn that around now, ask the other side of the question. Has there been an important issue that you just haven't been able to make any headway on?
It's a big challenge changing the way $400 billion is invested and really raising the voice of students in doing that. And so we would really love to see universities actually disclosing more of the information about their endowments so that we can have a real conversation. But still very few colleges, except for some public schools that are legally required to do it, very few schools disclose how they're investing their money or give any more than the broadest overview of what they're investing in.
And going back to this question of where the money is sitting and what they're investing in, I was wondering if there were certain aspects about an issue that make it more or less likely to generate traction when you're trying to change it for your organization and for the students that work through it. I was thinking of things like whether the issue involves race or children, you know, so on. Are there certain things that make it more or less likely to be successful?
You know, I think the easiest things for colleges and universities from an administration perspective to change are the ones that they have very little stake in. So, for instance, a lot of schools, 50 schools divested from companies supporting the regime in Sudan in the mid-2000s. But they really had almost no investments in companies doing that anyway. So a lot of them were just making a statement on those issues. But I think that actually where we get traction is where people really have an engaged interest. So climate change right now is really important to lots of students on college campuses. They probably heard about it in your classes, and they hear about it in classes that they're taught all the time, and they've been hearing about it since they've been little kids now. And they really are seeing this as an issue. It's a generational crisis and something that they need to address. And so when their colleges and universities aren't doing anything about it with their investments, they say, this is an issue we need to deal with and we need to push our colleges and universities on.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm talking with the Responsible Endowments Coalition's Executive Director, Dan Apfel. Well, when it comes to the students, again, how do you see what your organization is trying to do fitting into the broader aims of higher education? Do you see yourself as being part of a university's bigger mission in some way?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, colleges and universities, like I said, have a public purpose. You know, they're not created – so they actually weren't set up and are not given their charitable status, which allows people to donate and take a tax deduction. We're not given that and also not pay a lot of other taxes. They weren't given that status so they could train people to go work on Wall Street and donate a lot of money back to the college. Fundamentally, they were set up because education, having an educated society, is a benefit to society as a whole, not to the individuals. And we really believe that their investments, like many colleges and universities, agreed with us in the 70s and 80s. So they actually have principles and have done this before, that this is – these are fundamental to their mission. And actually, if you talk to people who are experts in fiduciary duty, which is a legal term for their responsibility to the college or university, that it actually – means legally that it's a responsibility to the mission. It's often perceived today as a responsibility to making as much money as possible, but actually it's a responsibility to do the best thing that you can for the mission of the institution, whether that's research or education. And obviously, colleges and universities need to make money to be able to, in their endowments, to be able to pay for their pay for the education of their students, to support research. But if they're doing something that's fundamentally different from what the faculty is doing on campus and what the students are learning, then we believe that that's actually problematic for their fiduciary duty, and that they need to align their investments that way. And that, again, that we think that and. There's a lot of research to show that they can make a lot of money doing it. They can make just as much money doing it.
And you mentioned a couple of local examples before earlier on in our conversation. I was curious to know, are there schools around here in this region that do particularly well or particularly poorly or have done some things particularly well and fallen down in other areas that leap out at you?
You know, I think there are schools around the country that are doing particularly well. There's also other institutions that are. So in the region, one organization that's not a college or university but that I would like to highlight that does this is the Park Foundation in Ithaca. They actually have aligned their approximately $200 million endowment with their mission and really take into account the things that they grant to, the missions of the organization that they grant to in their investment policy. And there are schools around the country that are doing this too. Unity College recently became the first college to divest from fossil fuels, for instance, and they're America's Environmental College. And they're really encouraging other colleges and universities to follow suit. Loyola University of Chicago, who we've worked with for a long time, is a Jesuit school in Chicago that has taken it has talked to the student body, has talked to their community and figured out the issues that are most resonant to them. And they're particularly environmental and human rights issues. And so recently they've been engaging with companies that they own to, for one, to stop financing mountaintop removal coal mining. We actually worked with them to get JP Morgan Chase to stop financing mountaintop removal coal mining, which they did 2 years ago. And also to help their local community groups engage with a company that recently closed the two coal-fired power plants in Chicago but refused to and continues to refuse to clean up the and to remediate the sites. And so they're working as investors alongside community groups to help them to get this company, Edison International, to clean up these coal-fired power plant sites.
And you mentioned before, and you've talked about it throughout, the campaign to divest from fossil fuels. Companies that are devoted to that. One thing that I've heard said about that particular campaign is, well, there's going to be a real limit to any kind of impact it's going to have because it is such an enormous area, and you're never going to be able to really have an impact on the bottom line for those companies. How would you respond to that?
You know, there's a lot of different things and different reasons for doing responsible investing. And I think nobody who's doing this really believes that in the short term that we can actually change the fossil fuel companies themselves, right? Exxon, for example, has $100 billion in cash. So they have one quarter of all the money that endowments have in the colleges and universities have in cash. But that said, these companies like Exxon and Chevron are responsible to public are accountable to public opinion. And what really investors can do through divestment is make the most powerful statement that they can with their money. And we know that what actually counts in society today is money. It's not changing our light bulbs, that's not going to affect Exxon or Chevron or actually the policy in Washington, but it's making a statement with our money. So it's great when a college or university says something about investing, when they say, we think, or when they say something about these companies, we think climate change is real and fossil fuel companies are bad. But by pulling their money out, they actually make a very powerful statement. They send a signal to the companies and also to policymakers that this is an important issue.
Well, let me get to the three questions at the end. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I hesitate to say this, but I think that the chapter of my life that I'm currently living is a warming planet. It seems like something that's happening that's affecting my daily life, students are really demanding policy change and change at colleges and universities and change at corporations. And I think, honestly, we don't have a lot of time to deal with this. And so we're putting a lot of energy into dealing with climate change in a way that's just and fair and equitable as possible, while we also try and stop the warming that's happening as much as we can.
And second, what's your worst trait?
I think my worst trait is my focus, which sometimes prevents me from seeing sort of the bigger picture. So sometimes it makes me work too much, but I think more importantly, it prevents me from seeing all of the different great things that people are doing out there and lifting up all of the excellent work that's being done in communities all over the country and the world, and just focusing on the negative things that are happening on colleges and university campuses and in society at large. Of course, there's so many things that are going wrong that we'd rather – that it's so easy to focus on the problems. But in fact, there's a lot of wonderful things that we can look at and really rejoice in the opportunities and the possibilities that exist ahead of us.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
I think just recently, Harvard University agreed to create a vice president for sustainable investing. And I thought that at least while I was in this job, Harvard University, the largest educational endowment in the world at $30 billion, would really never do anything on responsible investing more than they have, which is almost nothing. And so the fact that they're even taking a step in that direction and doing it pretty publicly seems like we're making a big impact. And it was really surprising to me that they're willing to do that.
That was Dan Apfel. Dan, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me here. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Grant Reher. Join me again next week on WRVO Public Media for more conversation in the public interest.
Support comes from the Campbell Institute, hosting a lecture on faith and progressive politics by Sister Simone Campbell, Friday, April 26th at 4 in the Maxwell Auditorium on the SU campus. Information at campbellinstitute.org. The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender, Kelly Coleman, John Fornoff, Stephanie Lee, Hennish Pullickle, and Sophia Celeste Tate, and recording engineer Tom Fazio. For more information on the Campbell Conversations, visit WRVO.org.